Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your fill-in host, Sean Frelick. Scott Catoon is taking care of some business. You know, we're part of the startup life, so we have to take care of some things sometimes. And this is Technori Live on WGN Radio, the podcast edition, where Chicago's top tech founders and entrepreneurs come to share their story. On today's show, we're going to have a very recent guest come back to talk more about financial health. We're talking about Joe Holberg, the founder of Holberg Financial and the author of Rogue Finances. But before that, I'm going to fill you in with some of the top tech headlines. Hello, buckos. It's time for me to dish out top tech news with a bonus slice of weird. Uber is currently on the hunt for a new CEO after founder Travis Kalanick bowed to pressure and resigned. Investors threatened a revolt if Kalanick didn't leave the company, and obviously it worked. Uber is, of course, a unicorn, being valued at $70 billion. Kalanick founded the company in 2009 and saw a meteoric rise, but a recent slew of allegations, including sexual harassment, skirting the law, and stealing IP, have damaged the company's public image. Uber is currently without a CEO, COO, CFO, and CMO. But let this be an educational moment for all builders out there. No, you're 99% likely to not be as successful as Kalanick. Let's get that out of the way. But you still must check the infrastructure of what you're building. Make sure it's not built on immaturity. As Uber descends into a well of shame, Amazon continues its march to supremacy. What Amazon has been very proficient in is in removing friction points, allowing them to upscale convenience. And boy, does it feel good. Now Amazon Prime, the yearly subscription service, is expanding to Amazon Wardrobe. The new service allows you to order clothes and try them on before you buy them. The service provides you a shipping slip for any pair of pants or underoos that your belly hangs from in an unflattering fashion. But where Amazon gets slick is that they entice you to keep your clothing by offering you bigger discounts based on how many clothes you try out. You slick operators. Would you believe it if I told you a company founded in Silicon Valley decided to move to Chicago? No, it's true. I'm not jerking you around. I'm talking about ShipBob, which honestly caught my attention with that name. They recently announced a collection of $17 million in Series B round funding. They are this week's Technori shout-out. Chicago made sense because ShipBob is a shipping and logistics company. They help major companies figure out how to get all their goods to their consumers, and they're looking to open more warehouses to help some smaller companies reach the goal of getting their e-commerce ever swifter. The venture capital gravy is flowing in Chicago. Let's hope that you find a way to ladle some of it into your pockets. I love you, Chi-Town. See my full show on technori.com Monday night. Peace out. So the reason that sounds kind of canned is because that is going to play on the Saturday Live show, but you get a sneak peek of it here if you are listening in and avid fans of the show. So now I'm going to switch it over to our guest here, Joe Holberg. Welcome back to Technori.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so you and Scott, you covered a lot of things, mostly the book. So what's the status of the book now? How long has it been out?
The book's been out since Valentine's Day, actually. Okay. You know, love and personal finances go really well together, you know.
So what was the experience of being an author for you?
Well, it's evolving, but at the same time, it's done a whole host of things. The first one is it allows me to connect with our users more directly. And it's really exciting because most of the feedback has sort of been, Joe, your book is really conversational. It makes me feel like you're sitting next to me, which I think is a pretty nice thing to hear from a reader, because a lot of the personal finance books that are out there, they read like textbooks with stories. And I didn't want to write that kind of book. So, So yeah, it's been pretty well received.
Okay. So yeah. I imagine there might be an inkling for a second book in there at some point.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
No announcement yet, but I imagine when there is an announcement, Technori might be the platform for that.
Oh yeah. You know, I'll hit you up.
Okay. So let's, you talked about the book before, so let's talk about Holberg Financial. So what's going on the business side of things these days for you?
Yeah, sure. So the book is actually a supplement to the business, in that we actually started growing so quickly, which is, as you said, a gravy flowing problem in the opening. But what ended up happening was we were sitting down with so many people and saying similar things, that in writing the book, we're actually supplementing one of our main goals, which is to help people increase their financial education. And the way that we're doing that is we're going to companies and we're saying, hey, your employees really want financial guidance and support, and we can actually provide that to them as a benefit. And so far, it's been pretty well received in that we're bringing on a bunch of new partnerships, tons of employees, and their feedback has just been like, this is exactly what I wanted, and I didn't even really know that I wanted it, which is a very common thing in finance, right?
Yeah, and obviously it's can be a very prickly and confusing subject. Why do you think financial education is so poor?
I think there's a lot of reasons for it, but I think one of the main ones is there's no real good outlet that exists right now in our formal education system. You definitely don't learn it in K-12, right? I mean, you're learning about biology, social studies, history, et cetera. And those are all important things, but we just haven't made it sort of like a national priority. And then even when people get into college, right, it's always an option to take a personal finance class if your college or university even offers it in the first place. And something that I didn't realize when I started, but now know to be true, is that people that actually studied accounting and business and finance, they were actually studying the corporate side of things. And so they actually don't understand the personal side. So we know that if somebody can manage the books of a $1 billion accounting firm and they don't know how to manage their personal finances, then we can necessarily sort of deduce that everyone else out there wants it as well and needs it.
So you've done work on both the individual financial health side as well as the corporate side. Mm-hmm. So where do those two overlap in your client-to-client relationships?
Yeah, it's a good question. So right now we are a financial health and wellness benefit that companies would deliver to their employees. And what's really nice about this, like you said earlier, is finances is prickly, right? If your CEO or your CFO stands in front of their employees and says, you guys should use the 401k, or, you know, you should sign up for our commuter benefit or change your health insurance plan, that can be a really prickly or awkward situation where if they use us as a benefit, we can actually come in and deliver what is more aligned and objective to the employee. So we actually help the companies achieve their benefits outcomes while also being able to help the individual both in the workplace and outside of work, right? Because if you want to buy a house, you don't turn to your CFO. You like go to your friends or your parents.
Right.
And so like a lot of people have non-work questions related to finance. How do I pay my student loans down? How do I, you know, manage my credit card debt? What is a credit score? Your employer is not going to answer that, and they don't want to, but we can.
Okay. So what does this actually look like? Are you going into these companies and hosting seminars or like sit downs with people to like answer questions, to clear the air and whatnot? What does it look like?
Yeah. So one of the fun things, especially as a startup, is we get to custom design a program for a company. And so the company can sort of like express their interest. You know, we think we want this and we think we want that in terms of an actual delivery. And then we can actually go back and we will custom design an actual sort of like internal campaign where we're rolling it out and we're building trust and awareness and engagement. And then we're also supplementing with all these valuable things. We have internal monthly newsletters, which are a little more passive that people can read. We'll do presentations. And then at the heart of it, we have our tech platform, where as people come onto that, that's where we're actually working with them in a little more detail. And we're actually able to sit there and get to know them as an individual and then help them use our platform, which allows us to set their goals based on our conversation. So it's highly personalized. And then the platform itself will help them track and then ultimately meet their financial goals. And that's what helps people achieve financial health. And that's where we're very different than a lot of other tech solutions that provide more like data or overview, right? You think about Mint.com. Mint.com is awesome, but at the same time, it'll never give you a strategy or an actual recommendation. And so everyone sort of sits there and they scratch their head. They're like, okay, cool. My savings account went up by $50, but what does that mean for my progress towards my home purchase that is at some point in the future? We can help people figure that out.
Okay. So let's talk about what it's like for the millennial and what kind of opportunities you see for them. And maybe learning from some of the mistakes of our past generations, like what are some of the best opportunities you see for millennials in regards to getting a head start on your financial health?
Yeah, absolutely. So not only is there a huge impetus to work with millennials, I myself am a millennial.
There you go.
Definitely understand it. One of the things that we have to pay attention to as an age group is we're the first age group that is using financial technology, and there's both a huge opportunity and there's both a massive drawback. And to give you a concrete example, Acorn is a savings app, which is a really cool thing. But if you're using Acorn in isolation, which a lot of people do to build savings, you're actually probably leveraging a cool technology and increasing your savings, but you're probably not doing it in a way that actually is aligned to and meeting some other goal that would have some other aspect of saving. So like if you're rounding up the change or saving $30 a month on Acorn, good for you. That's $30 more in your bank account. But if you need to save $250 a month to buy a house in 2.5 years, Acorn is insufficient to help you achieve that goal, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things facing millennials in terms of learning from past generations. I think the single largest thing is getting an early start on retirement, which everyone hears on and on and on. But the interesting thing now is it literally takes 5 minutes or less to actually change your allocation based on your paycheck if you have a 401k at work. And it's like, do you have 5 minutes to ensure that you can retire? And most people would say yes, or hopefully say yes, I have 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So I think another issue for me personally is being as a part of this generation, and I haven't personally reached the point where like 401ks and salaries is not something that is in my thought process as of now. I'm still in the very early, fresh out of school for a little over a year now, but we're still trying to get our foundation out from under us. So what kind of advice do you have for the young professionals that are in regards to savings when they're still just trying to earn enough money to get by?
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think there's a real sort of resource constraint that a lot of people don't want to acknowledge, right? You only make a certain amount and you definitely have a certain amount of expenses. And so while, you know, a significant amount of savings towards something like a 401k might not be achievable, maybe you have student loans or maybe you have, you know, a trip that you want to go on. I think what's really important at the outset, let's pretend it's 22 to maybe 26, and we're just, you know, making up numbers for ages right now. But what's really important is you should definitely be doing the things that you value. And I think that's one thing that is like not kosher to say in finances. Like, I will never try to convince somebody not to take a trip, right? Because it's valuable. Being a world citizen, getting out and seeing new cultures, there's no price tag that you can assign to that. But what we know is you don't need to be going to Paris, staying at 5-star hotels and spending $4,000 on a 2-week vacation. You might be able to pull that off through, you know, using Airbnb and, you know, doing some hostels or something, and you can spend half that much. So travel, but don't blow all your money. And so you can still meet several of these financial objectives while still doing non-financial things.
Okay. So it sounds like some of the guidance there is not to sweat it too much, even though this is a very sweat-inducing subject.
Right, right. Yeah, you should do the things you enjoy, but you shouldn't do them in excess. And, you know,
right.
Shoot, 200 years ago, Benjamin Franklin said it, so I'm, you know, repeating an old saying, everything in moderation or whatever. But there is some truth to it, right? You can't be an ascetic monk where you're, you know, spending a dollar on breakfast every single day and, like, eating bread and water. Like, that just doesn't work. You know, you're probably going to have health issues that are going to cost more in the long run anyway, so it's
right.
Defeatist. So, you know, and you can make that argument for a lot of the areas, including travel.
All right, well, a lot of wisdom being spread here in this short amount of time, but where can our listeners go to learn more about you, your books, and your work?
Yeah, so, you know, especially for companies that are trying to give something more to their employees than just a ping pong table or just a beer keg on Friday, you know, we're growing into that space, especially in Chicago, so we're super excited. Everything's on our website, holbergfinancial.com, and then, of course, you know, the book is on Amazon, and you mentioned them being, you know, taking over the universe, which, you know, I'll be a small corner of that and hopefully sell a couple more copies.
Yeah, hopefully the book industry doesn't get too slammed by that supremacy.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, thanks so much for coming back to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You can watch this episode and more at technori.com, download the podcast on iTunes, and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or follow me at Frelick Sean. Stick a fork in it, this dish is done.